Now back to our Football Friday, powered by Bud Light Seltzer, official partner of the Seattle Seahawks, on your home for college football Saturdays and the NFL. Seattle Sports Radio 950, KJR.
Final hour here of Chuck and Buck in the Mornings on a Bud Light Seltzer Football Friday. Bud Light Seltzer. Boy, pour it over some glass. Have it with your football this weekend. Try the different flavors that they've got. It's a different kind of Budweiser experience. I'll tell you that right now. Joining us now on the program is Hugh Millen, who we must hear from on Fridays heading into the football weekend. We call this segment X's and O's. Hugh, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well. Looking forward to that matchup. The oldest coaches and very accomplished coaches. We'll see how it plays out.
Yeah, that's a great matchup. I'll let you in on the conversation we've been having. Belichick or Carroll, which guy would Hugh Millen, the young, strong-armed, handsome, golden-armed quarterback, which one would he have wanted to spend his entire career with?
Well, I was very few of those attributes. I might have been young once, but that's about the only box I could have checked. But I was a guy who really craved discipline. You know, my dad was in the Army as a computer programmer, and Don James, he was a guy that had a reputation as the most disciplined guy. So the times that I played for players, coaches too much, it made me uneasy because I just felt like we weren't reaching our highest potential. Having said all that, I probably changed my thoughts about it through the years just watching Carroll. I don't understand how he has the hammer because I've never seen him raise his voice in practice. It's really remarkable. I think his hammer is just that he creates a fun environment, but he'll cut you at a moment's notice. That's near as I can tell. So I don't know. I'd rather win six championships for a bully than have a country club and win one. So I know you want me to say in Seattle here, I'd rather play with Pete Carroll. The problem is that to win six championships, I'm going to have to play like Tom Brady, and that's just humanly possible. So at any rate, I'll dance with you and say Carroll in light of that. But, I never had a problem with the discipline. In fact, I liked it.
Well, I went with Belichick, so you wouldn't be the first person that went with Belichick this morning on KJR. So, you don't have to feel, like you're the Lone Ranger.
Because you want
to
win championships, right?
Yeah, I'm your Tonto on this one. All right, well, let's get into this matchup here, Hugh, against the Patriots. And I find it just fascinating, not only because it's early in the season, not only because some of the personnel has changed, and not only because we have great head coaches, but based on what we saw in week number one, because I don't know what we're going to see from these two teams in week number two. So let's start offensively then with you and what you saw from the Seahawks in week number one that surprised you a little bit, that you liked, that you just hope carries over here into week number two against the Patriots.
Well, I think you had the short passing game was the key. I mean, we talked about that yesterday where Russell Wilson only threw the ball down the field 20 yards or more two times, whereas as Aaron Rodgers, for example, had done it 10 times. So that was what was presented. They had a lot of concepts where if you drew it up on the whiteboard, you'd say, okay, if everything goes well and you throw to your primary receiver, well, you'd look, you'd say, well, all right, well, he's only going to catch it 6 yards from line of scrimmage. And in fact, Russell, a year ago, that what's called the air yards, the average air yards, that's from the line of scrimmage to where the ball is touched. So it takes away the run after the catch, and even if it's incomplete, you still can calculate, well, what would have the air yards been had the receiver caught it? Well, a year ago, Russell Wilson was at 9.4 yards per attempt. The year before that, 9.0. Well, Sunday there against Atlanta, he was at 5.3. So the short passing was a big part of it. That led to the high efficiency, but that would be, and then, of course, they augmented it with the two long throws to DK Metcalf. But by and large, the efficiency, the kind of the Bill Walsh style, Mike Holmgren style short passing game, I think that was more of a Bill Walsh thing early on. Mike got you know, was able to get the ball into some intermediate stuff. But the original thought with the West Coast offense was it actually originated in Cincinnati, where Virgil Carter was the quarterback and Bill Walsh was the coordinator. And he just said, my offensive line is terrible. And at the time that, you know, like the teams like Raiders and the Steelers, they would take these big seven-step drops, 9 yard, you know, 8-9 yard drops. They couldn't protect. So Bill Walsh just said, well, let me just throw the ball to the fullback 3 yards from line of scrimmage, and that'll be like our running game. And that really was the philosophy, not necessarily the scheme, but the philosophy of the West Coast offense. And so I think Seattle philosophically had a lot of that going on last week. We'll see if they take it into Sunday.
Hugh, you know, there's been a lot of talk about the Seahawks potentially reverting back to maybe a little bit more of the run game versus kind of letting it fly based on the matchup. How much, in your opinion, do you think that they still need, how essential is it that they still need to kind of push the ball down the field and look for some big plays, even though they know that they're going up against one of the better secondaries out there?
Well, I think if you've got the great corners, then you know, I don't know that you always want to try and win that matchup. You got to test it out and take a look. I'm not saying you shy away from it, but you better have a plan to work the middle of the field. And you know, they got linebackers, backup linebackers, new guys. You know, a couple of their guys, most notably Dante Hightower. He's been one of the most instinctive playmakers we've seen at the linebacker position a long time. He's possibly in the discussion. I don't know about a Hall of Famer, but probably in the next level below that. There's some opportunities to exploit some inexperience in the middle of the field, and so I wouldn't be banging my head out trying to win outside the numbers when you have inexperience inside.
Hugh Millen is with us, the quarterback, the analyst here for X's and O's here on a Friday. Chuck and Buck in the morning, Sports Radio 950 KJR. I know you did the deep dive into Jamal Adams. We spent a lot of time talking about it yesterday in the roundtable. And so, you know, based off of your first experience with seeing Jamal Adams in that Seahawk uniform, obviously there's a lot to like. What about his game from that week one do you believe is sustainable? Is all of it possibly sustainable, the way he was used and the way he performed?
I don't think so. I don't think that if you look at the plays that he made, as we said, 13 times he filled the play-by-play sheet defensively. Of them, six, I broke them down to three categories. Six were coming off the edge. Three he had underneath pass coverage and thus a run gap responsibility. And then four of those plays he had deep pass responsibility and he would not have a gap in the run fits. He would just be a secondary run supporter. Of those six he came off the edge, he was untouched five times. And the one time he was touched, it was by Julio Jones. Now, Julio Jones is a physical receiver, at least as it pertains to receiving the ball. He wasn't much of a physical presence trying to block Jamal Adams. And Adams just kind of ran through him. But I don't expect the Patriots to let him impact the game and just run off the edge. It was like he was some kind of superhero, Mr. Invisible Man. Nobody even saw him. Nobody nobody looked at him. Nobody tried to block him. And you know, he's making sacks. He's hitting quarterbacks' arms. He's running down plays from behind. And I don't think the Falcons did a good job of adjusting to that, getting a plan. You know, everybody says, well, halftime adjustments. Why do you have to wait till halftime? You got a series. Yeah. Sit down on the bench. You know, offense, nobody's playing. You know, in high school, we sometimes have a hard time making adjustments in the halfway through the first quarter because we got like five of our offensive players are playing defense. You don't have that in the NFL. If you're having a hard time with Jamal Adams coming off the edge, sit down with the entire offense, get the grease board out, and make a damn adjustment. You know, and so I don't expect New England to get pants like that. They've got a week to prepare, and I think they do a better job of in-game adjustments.
Hugh, while this is the first time Newton will be facing the Seahawks in a Patriots uniform, he's played against the Seahawks quite a few times, and they've actually done a really good job of containing him so far. What do you think this Seahawks personnel is going to have to do, and how good are they going to be at doing it as far as containing Cam Newton?
Well, I spent the whole morning watching Newton's the coach's tape of their last game against the Dolphins, just to kind of compare what he's been to what he had been at Carolina. First of all, what I noticed is the shotgun percentage at Carolina in Newton's most recent year. He was shotgun 76%. The other day against the Dolphins, just 43%. So obviously 57% under center. What that does, the running game. Now, Newton ran the ball 15 times. And by my calculation, only one of it was a scramble play. The 14 were designed. Now, one of them was a take a knee, but 13 designed running plays. And from shotgun, his shoulders and hips are parallel to line of scrimmage. That means he can go left, he can go straight, he can go right. And so I think he's more of a threat when he's in shotgun. And the scheme that the Seattle really has to prepare for that other quarterbacks don't do. We saw his second run of the game was a read zone. That's where he keeps the ball in the area called the alley. That's outside the tackles. So that's a little bit towards the perimeter. What Cam Newton does is they have a scheme where they say, okay, it's a power gap scheme. And what that means, let's say Cam Newton's in the shotgun, and his left tackle and his left guard are going to get a double team at the point of attack. Then so they've got nice angles. And then the left tackle, they're going to keep that double team. The left tackle is going to go and finally release. He's going to go block the linebacker on the other side of the ball, meaning the offense's right side. Now the right guard for Newton he's going to pull and he's going to go right to left and he's going to fit up on the linebacker on the left side. So you got the linebackers all taken care of. Now the problem is, wait a minute. I said the left tackle is going to down block towards the ball. The end man on line of scrimmage is unblocked. Okay, so if you had Tom Brady doing this, you'd say, well, we need to add an extra back to block him, right? But what what Cam Newton's always done is they say, okay, let's have the running back. He'll fake like you can be in a single back. You can spread out, and the single back can be running to a wide left, like he's running a wide left. I wouldn't call it a sweep because that implies certain other blocking schemes. But let's just say a wide left run. That freezes that unblocked end. So as Newton's looking at the defensive end to his left side where he wants to run, that guy's unblocked, but it's the threat of Newton. He'll ride the ball in the stomach, and if the end defends the running back, he's going to keep it up in the middle in that power. And so it's quarterback power with a read incorporated. He did that for years and years at Carolina. I'm not going to say he's the only quarterback to do it because we saw it a little bit with Lamar Jackson, but by and large, teams don't want to have their quarterback running between the tackles like that. And yet Newton is, 250 pounds plus. He did that. So you see a ton of that, but you have to do that from shotgun. The only running play you can do from under center really with any consistency is the bootleg, where you fake, let's say, the running play from under center, turn your back, and then you roll out, and he actually had a touchdown pass on that, or touchdown run, rather, against that. So, but your limits for the quarterback running are far less under center. Nobody does the down-the-line veer option, like from Remember the Titans. So, anyway, that's and then the other thing quickly is that play action, because he was under center more, that there was more Newton turning his back on the defense and play action. In Cam Newton's most recent season at Carolina, he was 28% of his passes were play action. His MVP year, 2015, he was under 30%. The other day, again, with the Dolphins, 50% of his passes, exactly 50%, were from play action. And most of those from under center where he turns his back to the defense. That's something I don't really remember seeing from Newton. I thought he did a good job of coming back and reading the defense after turning his back to it. So those are two wrinkles that I certainly saw in my tape study.
All right, we only got about a minute left, but I, you know, Cam's got Bill Belichick now, and Tom Brady is off with Bruce Arians. Based off of Bruce Arians kind of throwing him under the bus because he's as blunt as any human being out there this past week for his poor performance against the Saints, do you think that Tom Brady has, like, phantom Belichick, like he misses him a little bit, you know, like he's got some tingling going on around him that he can still feel Belichick there, maybe miss him a little bit?
I'm sure that Brady's fine. You know, is everything he's gone through in ball, I'm sure he's secure. But yeah, you do have to ask yourself, why were we talking about this? Well, we're talking about this because it's unusual. It's conspicuous. It's conspicuous because we can deduce that most coaches don't do that, right? I mean, if most coaches did it, then we wouldn't be talking about it. So we have to say, well, why is Bruce Arians doing it? You know, Brett Favre says he shouldn't have done it. But, you know, Bruce Arians kind of reminds me of this, I don't know, he's kind of a pseudo tough guy. You know, he's saying, you know, new sheriff in town and all this stuff. Bruce Arians has won one playoff game in his entire coaching career. One playoff game. Compare that to Tom Brady. John Elway and Peyton Manning are tied for third place in playoff wins with 14. Joe Montana is alone at second place with 16 playoff wins. Tom Brady has 30 playoff wins. So, you know, but I do want to just say one thing that actually bothered me more than that with Bruce Arians. And it's this little trick that you hear from coaches. And it's always the insecure coaches who say this. I'm going to quote it word for word. He says, yeah, you look like Tom Brady in practice all the time, so it's kind of unusual to see in that ball game because, quote, they didn't do things that we didn't get ready for. Everything they did, we thought we were ready for. When coaches do that, do we all understand as fans what the hell they're doing? If a quarterback did that and said, hey, I was good on my end, it was everybody else's fault. You know, they ran bad routes. They didn't protect for me. Nobody made any plays for me. Do you understand what Bruce Arians did in that little quote? He said, hey, I had my team prepared. God, that bothers the hell out of me, the double standard. Players get eviscerated if they point the fingers and don't take accountability. And yet these coaches, and it's always the ones, like I say, who only have one playoff win, who want to slide that crap into their quotes. Man, you know. Win some damn games and stop being a pseudo tough guy.
There it is. The final words.
Quarterback whisperer. You know who's a freaking quarterback whisperer? Mike Holmgren. If you're such a quarterback whisperer, win more than one playoff game.
Yeah, there you go. Hugh Millen, great stuff, man. We appreciate it. Thanks all week long.
Sorry, guys. Sorry it went long.
All right, enjoy the weekend.
No, all right, dude. Later, buddy.
Hugh Millen joining us here on Chug and Buck in the Mornings. All right, we close out our show coming up next with one last thing. Sports Radio 950.